following notice was published 4 times in the last 7 weeks in the Long Island Business News and the Long Island Advance and serves as the call of the meeting. The Board of Education of the Center Moriches Union Free School District hereby gives notice that the annual meeting of the qualified voters of said school district will be held at the Clayton Erie Elementary School, Center Moriches, New York, on May 19, 2015, at 7 a.m. prevailing time, for the purpose of transacting such business as is authorized by the education law, including consideration of the annual budget for the 2015-2016 school year. At the back of the room were minutes from the last budget vote, the certification of the election, and the special vote that we had on December 9th. And at this time, I'd entertain a motion from the public to waive reading those minutes. Thanks, Lawrence. Can I have a second, please? All in favor? Thank you very much. I'll just announce that budget brochures are available in the main offices at the school district. They've been mailed home. The budget is available also in the schools and the public library. I'm here this evening. If you're not sure if you're registered to vote, I will be happy to check for you and make sure that you are. Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, but can you put a microphone on
the screen? I have to. When it gets too close, I feel like I want to sing. You know, you don't really want that. And as soon as I announce the candidates and give you the details of what you'll be voting on, I'll turn it over to Mr. Stewart and Mrs. Perkins, and they will make a presentation of the budget. The candidates for the Board of Education, in order that their names will appear on the ballot, are Annette Rank, Daryl L. Ely, Ron Navis, and Kathleen Reagan Golden. The propositions that you will be voting on are Proposition 1, resolved that the Board of Education of the Center Moriches Union Free School District, Suffolk County, New York, be hereby authorized to expend the sum set forth in the annual district budget as presented and to levy the necessary tax during the 2015-2016 school year. Proposition 2 is the bond proposition, resolved that the Board of Education of the Center Moriches Union Free School District in the County of Suffolk, New York, the district is hereby authorized to construct alterations and improvements to district school buildings and the sites thereof, and to expend therefore an amount not to exceed $8,272,884. B, that a tax is hereby voted in the aggregate amount not to exceed $8,272,884 to finance said cost, such tax to be levied and collected in installments in such years and in such amounts as may be determined by said Board of Education, and C, that in anticipation of said tax, bonds of the district are hereby authorized to be issued in the amount of $8,272,884, and a tax is hereby voted to pay the interest on said bonds as the same shall become due and payable. To be eligible to vote on the 19th, you must be 18 years old, a citizen of the United States, a resident for 30 days before the vote, and registered or registered to vote in a national local election. This time, I'll turn it over to Mr. Stewart.
I think I'm just going to go away from the microphone. If you can't hear me back there, just raise your hand. If you can't hear me, let me know, and I will certainly go on to the microphone. Tonight's presentation, the first slide that you're going to see, pretty much the way we've done it every year, is kind of a little bit backwards by design model that we felt like on the first slide, you would kind of get the answers immediately, and then I would tell you how we got to that point.
So if you're looking at the first slide here, you will see that the tax cap levy limitation, this is required by law. We had to send it to New York State. It was adopted by New York State. The tax cap levy limitation for the Center Meridian School District was a 4.21. The tax levy that the board unanimously approved by the Board of Education, about a month and a half ago, the Board of Education unanimously approved a tax cap of 1.3%. And if any of you were here in July, you would have watched the board as they put together their goals. One of the major goals of the Board of Education was not to go higher than 1.5%. The reason they decided to go to 1.3% was because if you were here about 2 months ago, the Board of Education voted again unanimously for the veterans tax exemption. And when you look at the veterans tax exemption, it was 0.2%. And then the board made a unanimous decision, instead of putting it out 1.5%, that they would put it out by 1.3%. What that means to the average household, per household, is an increase of $90.53. The way you figure that out, and by the way, if anybody, there's a lot of times people ask questions, but I want to take my own tax bill, and I want you to look at it, Mrs. Stewart, so I can understand my tax bill. You can certainly tomorrow come to my office, or Carol Perkins' office, but the way you figure it out is that right now, the average household under school taxes, because that's what we're looking at tonight, school taxes, is $6,964.20. The way I figure out the $90.53 is I multiply the tax levy increase imposed by the Board of Education of a 1.3, and I multiply the $6,964.20, and that's how I end up with the $90.53. Every year I put this slide up because I just think no matter which way it goes, I would put this up anyway. I've done it for 5 years now. I think it's important for us to see what we're doing here in Center Meridian. And not that it's always apples to apples, because it's not. But most people want to see what the surrounding school districts with their tax levy. So you can see from the slide here that this particular year, Center Meridian is at a 1.3% tax levy. And of the surrounding districts, the neighboring schools, we happen to be the lowest this year with the surrounding schools. We also put this slide up. On April 28th, there's a certain amount of schools that have actually reported to Newsday and other places where they're going to go with their tax levy. Not all of them have put in. At this point in time, at least up to the 28th, I had 118 out of 124 that reported. And two parts I think you'd want to know is one is our budget to budget, understanding Center Meridian's budget last year and how much actually is there an increase, or in this year, it's actually a decrease. So we also wanted you to look at Nassau County, Suffolk County, and Long Island. So the first column is a budget-to-budget increase. And from last year to this year, our budget has actually went to a decrease, as we went down 1.02%. When you look at Nassau, the average is 1.71. In Suffolk County, 1.65. And in Long Island, it's 1.68. On the bottom, we are the fifth lowest, and I think the Board of Education, the community should be very proud throughout this whole process. We are the fifth lowest out of 118 districts on Long Island that's reported so far for budget percent change. In the next column is the tax level. So it's the same as what I went over in the last slide. We are at a 1.3%, and as you can see, Nassau County averages a 1.45, Suffolk is a 1.99, and Long Island is a 1.71. On the bottom, we are the 28th lowest out of 118 districts for the tax cap levy. Many of you that I see around here tonight, you have been present through our presentations. So some of this, you've seen some extensive presentations by Mr. Soto, Ms. Perkins, Ms. Hardwick, and so on down the line. But I thought it was important to kind of look at the timeline of how we got to where we are today. So on January 28th, on 2015, that is where Mr. Soto and I presented the enrollment and the staffing presentation. In that presentation that we gave that night, and I should let you know that that was our first presentation. The Board of Education, they made almost a complete turnaround with the way they wanted to see it this year. And actually, I think it worked out very well. But the Board of Education, you heard it in the public, there was a lot of discussion about our presentations in the past, transparency, how should we do it. And the board requested of the administration to work with staffing first.
Yeah.
Instead of going staffing last, Mr. Stewart, and we know things might change as you go along, but we want to see staffing up front. We want you to look at the enrollment, and if you remember, Ms. Adams had done this years before, and take the staffing, and we want to see that first. So we did do that. And in that presentation, we had a reduction of one elementary section. We had a reduction of one middle school section. And we had an addition of one ESL teacher. The goal of Mr. Soto and I, when we were putting this together, was to make sure that we didn't have any cuts programmatic. That was our goal when we put this together at this point in time. Went into the next presentation. That presentation, I believe, right, was Carol, right? Yes. So the next presentation was Ms. Perkins. She did a presentation on the salaries and benefits. That in that presentation was the elimination of the administrative position of deputy superintendent. She not only presented that, she also went on further, actually went back to January 28th, and again reminded and explained what had happened on January 28th. When we got to April 22nd, that's where the board actually adopted the budget. The board unanimously, all board members, all five board members, voted unanimously to adopt the budget. During that time, before they adopted it, I made my recommendations as superintendent. We made a reduction in central office staff. As everyone knows, my outstanding assistant in my office, Ms. Kelly, is retiring. She's going to be solving this. We decided at that point in time that we were not going to fill that position. We were going to fill it with part-timers and work from within. That cut was requested by me at the Board of Education, actually for me to them. We also had one reduction in paraprofessional staff. When Mr. Soto and I looked at the entire paraprofessional group, we looked at IOGs, looked at people in different positions. We had the ability to be able to cut what we believe to be one paraprofessional. And we also had the elimination of the parent-child home program. That particular night, we were here that night, you watched Ms. Hardwick and Mr. Soto give a pretty deep explanation of how the school district was going to fill that gap. And if you're interested in listening to that presentation, it is online, but they explained that night how they were going to do that. Right now, the way the board has adopted the budget and where we're at, right now, we have been able to maintain all our electives. We've been able to maintain our complete music and arts program. We have been able to maintain all our advanced regions or advanced placement course offerings. Intact are all our athletic teams and all our interscholastic contests. Also intact are all our clubs, all our activities, and all our PE field trips.
Tonight, we're going to revisit
go down. We ended up paying off the TRS almost immediately. But that's something that did, in the end, work out very well. I think we're all amazed how low it went. Possibility it'll go low and get lower again next year. I wouldn't be surprised at that as well.
The next category is debt service. That's your principal.
And we're going to do Proposition 1 and Proposition 2. We have this griddle here as well. But this, if you can see how it's going to look in the palette, moves actually at the end in the next couple slides. But this is pretty much a summary of what we've said. The budget is $40,074,666. The budget increase is a -1.02, and the tax levy increase is a 1.3. Proposition 2.
through Proposition 2 briefly. The purpose really of this proposition is to address the capital needs that are going on in the district. With the help of the Facilities Committee and the administration over the last probably 18 months, a plan was put together for large-scale capital projects which normally aren't into the general budget. Again, we identified with the assistance of the administration the needs of the district on a capital project basis. We broke the project down into two categories. The nuts and bolts, I mean, if you look at it at home, your nuts and bolts are your roof, your hot water heater, your boiler, your asphalt pavement. They're things, if you're a homeowner, you hate to spend money on, but you know you have to do it. I need to spend this much money to get hot water for my shower. I need to replace my roof. Things you hate to spend money on, but these are large capital projects that can't go into the general budget, but they are really a need for the school district in terms of maintaining the shell of the building. The second projects that we'll look at are your educational, your programmatic needs. What is done to help the children, to help the environment, better the teaching within the school district. And we'll take a look at some of those projects that are also in the capital plan. These are some of the existing conditions. This is actually the roof at the elementary school. And some of you may say, you know, how did we get to this spot on a lot of these capital projects? And it really, if you take a step back, it almost goes back to probably in the 1990s, when school districts were putting their large capital projects into their budget. They were allowed to get all of their building aid. Now, we as a district get about 61% building aid. So if we said, for example, we put $1 million in our budget to do capital projects, the following year, we would get 61% back, or $610,000 back on our $1 million expense. We then take that money the following year and use it to offset taxes or use it to offset capital projects the following year. About 2001, the State Education Department said, hey, wait a second. If you're going to put a new roof on, and we're going to say the life of the roof is 15 years, we're not going to give you that full building aid back the following year. We're going to spend that over 15 years. So if the life of the roof is 15 years, we're only going to give you 1/15 of your $610,000 back over the next 15 years. So it really adversely affected the way school districts were doing projects in their capital budget. But at the same time, they took the shiny keys and they said, everybody, look at this. At the same time, we're going to give you an additional 10% building aid. So now instead of getting 61%, you're going to get 71%. So what school districts did, and I'm sure you guys remember some of this, they started going for these large, large bond issues. Let's do everything. We're getting an additional 10% aid. Sachem went for $228 million. Smithtown was $120. Comac was $100-something. So they, again, by pulling all those capital projects out of their annual budget, they threw all of their money into large bond issues. I think by the time school districts realized what they were doing, they were so far behind the eight ball, they forgot about maintenance and small projects. They weren't able to do a lot of the routine maintenance, a lot of the small-scale projects that you normally do on a year-to-year basis. Then came the 2% tax gap, and the first thing that went were capital projects. There were years where school districts didn't do anything. They weren't able to. In order to get underneath that 2%, those first couple of years, school districts across Long Island pull out basically all capital projects and a large portion of their maintenance projects got taken out as well. Some of the existing conditions in the bathrooms is at the elementary school, they are of original construction, so about 50 or 60 years old. This is just a condition of one of the science labs, the electric and the plumbing and the utilities underneath the floor of the science lab. So let's take a look briefly. I know a lot of you guys have seen these studies, so I'm not going to go through each and every one. But over at the elementary school, some of the highlights, the big project here is replacing all of the flat roofs on the building. We're going to do interior door and hardware replacement, putting security hardware on the doors to prevent and help in the lockdown. Refurbishing toilets. I think there's four toilets within the corridors that are going to be renovated, completely replaced, including handicap accessibility. And probably the most important thing here is the septic system. The septic system is being pumped out almost on an every other week basis. It's no longer at capacity. It's no longer able to function properly. It needs to be completely replaced, as well as some interior reconstruction. Remember, in the old proposition, there was a larger interior reconstruction project. We'll go through briefly what we're doing now, proposing a new project. Yeah, this is at the elementary school. So what we're doing is we're going to renovate four large bathrooms here, and it's a little hard to see, two small bathrooms here in the old portion of the building. We're going to expand a couple of classrooms and create a new multi-use science lab, MST lab, in the original portion of the building. At the secondary school, the large portion, if you remember, in the old proposition, the proposed plan was to expand by building new science classrooms expanding of the footprint. We're no longer going to do that. We're going to completely renovate the existing science rooms, not as large as we would have liked, but nonetheless, they will increase in size, and we'll wind up doing seven science labs. That's the big item there. We're also still doing renovations to the 300 wing, as well as some interior reconstructions. Again, these are projects that would have, in the past, gone into the yearly budget, but because of the way the state education formula is now done, it prevents us from doing some of those. Really, the interior renovation pieces in the high school are limited into science labs and two large classrooms in the 300 room. Total cost for all of the proposed projects is $8.2 million. And again, we received 61% building aid. So all of the projects that we are proposing are fully eligible for building aid. So really, 61 cents on every dollar that we spend will come back to the voters over the next 15 years in terms of rebuilding it.
The estimated tax increase for the project, the $20 million project, is a 1.3% increase in taxes. Now, 1.3% is going to be happens that the debt service ratio equates to a 1.3% increase. That's approximately $90 a year, or $7.50 a month. And the first step payment should be 2016. And what usually happens is once the budget, if the bond passes, what happens then is the architect will prepare the drawings and the plans for the state, and then it gets submitted to the state, and the state has to go through the plans, and sometimes it takes some time for them to do that. Once the approved plans come back, it then goes out to bid, and then based upon that,
sometimes just hearing it or actually seeing it here, it's hard to understand. So the Board of Education has done is we requested to have some walkthroughs, and as you're going to see, we have scheduled two walkthroughs in the very near future. We have one this coming Monday. This coming Monday at 5 p.m. We also have one on Wednesday at 7 p.m. We'll be meeting at Clayton Ewing. If you cannot make those, you say, look, I'm jammed up those 2 days, but I really want to take a walkthrough. By all means, stop by one of the walkthroughs and show you. Like I said, it's hard to see when you see here, even on the poster boards. But I think the one science area kind of showed it to me is when you go in there, you see the same labs. Kind of I was in the 1970s until they stopped pulling back some of the furniture and things of that nature. And you look underneath and you say, wow, you can see how old it actually is. But we would encourage everybody to please come to the walkthroughs. People, I think, have done the past. It's very important.
So, now that we've gone through the budget and the bond proposition, we can walk in on Tuesday, June 19th. You'll see two propositions. First proposition is for the budget, and we can together look over the exact wording of the budget. Proposition
actually received, and correct me if I'm wrong, the one-year term, I'm sorry, the one term that's up there that begins in 2015 and ends in 2018. So the person with the most votes will get a three-year term. The person with the second most votes will actually be the remainder of the term, which is up there, and that will be the end of June 30th, 2016. That also will start immediately after the vote. The candidates, as you see, Daryl, I get your name correct now, is Daryl Ely, Ron Novice, Annette Frank, and Kathleen Reagan Gold. Can't tell you which way to vote. We just encourage you to come out and vote. The election will be happening always at 7 a.m., 9 p.m., like we have last year at Lake Huey Elementary School. We will take any questions. Feel free to ask any questions, presentation.
On the Proposition 2 for the high school, is there anything available for more of a breakdown on what those topic heads were?
Yes.
For example, security was $125,000.
Yep.
Is there more of a breakdown where it's going?
Yep. If you go onto the website, I put everything back so you guys can go in other areas, but it is completely broken down. If you go to the Center Richards website, go right under the budget area, you'll see all of this broken down.
So that 125 is broken down into...
Correct. Correct.
Thank you.
I've seen it.
Yes.
Each item, how much each item is, right across the entire number.
Where is $25,000? Is $125,000?
Exactly.
Well.
Correct.
Me?
Yes.
I have a question for you. One is, can we put the board that you have up on the website for people to see?
Yes. We've got somebody else. It's funny, she said somebody has to do it this morning. I didn't get it done. I will have it up tomorrow.
Thank
we're
you.
Also going to leave it in all the schools. Because we just got them up in both schools, so when you walk in a couple of weeks now, you won't want to get rid of them. But yeah, they'll be there. But yes.
Thank you. Second one, May 13th in Duke Kennedy. Can we get another date for a walkthrough for the school?
Ooh, I apologize. We certainly can. We're working off Mr. Phillips' schedule. Okay, absolutely. We will not do it on May 13th.
Thank you.
Put that on the microphone. Canceled. I'm so sorry. I apologize. I didn't even realize that one.
And my third question was that we had a very poor turnout for our December proposition. So my concern is there's not many people getting through. So how are we going to get out there, or what are we going to do as a community to get this out there for people to come into our school, see the conditions, and vote?
Yeah, you know, this is a tough one. We sent out literature, as you probably saw the district news. We think it was pretty well written by Mr. Soto with the board that commented, all five of them, pretty extensive. I then followed up with the bond issue. We will certainly do some Connect Ed calls, but I got to be actually careful with Connect Ed, because I want to be fair to the entire community and make that happen. I don't think I can do Connect Ed, because I don't think that's really appropriate to do that. We put it on the website. I'm up for ideas.
I have time about it.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah, just
so
send it to me. I mean, I'm willing to get the people out. We hope because a lot of people come for the regular vote.
I actually agree. I think there will be more of a turnout because it's more of a regular vote.
Yeah.
I just want people to be educated of how to vote. That's my biggest thing. And I think that,
one of the things that's tough for us, so I fully support getting everybody out to vote 100%. One of the things that's tough for us is we can educate on exactly what is being done and what's being proposed, but we can't, as a board or as administration, tell people how to vote. So absolutely, to your point, get as many people out as possible, get them to the walkthroughs. You know, we did a walkthrough last year and it went for the December vote, and there were three people there. I would love if everybody in the community came and could see. Yeah. Yep. I fully support that. Absolutely.
And the last bond, there was a group of very active parents. I wasn't on the board, but I was part of a group of very active parents who
are certainly allowed to say how they, you know, and send information. So that's really what is necessary here.
Absolutely.
So if you want to lead it, you're on. It's a big area.
Thank you for coming out. I really appreciate it. I know that take the time with the girl families to come and listen to our presentation. Some of you were here month after month listening to all the budget presentations, and now we're at the end of the process. We're going to do that every myself.
Motion to adjourn. I can make a motion to adjourn special meeting.
Motion.
Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Okay, adjourned until the vote May 19th, 2015 at 7 a.m. Motion carries unanimously. That brings us to our regularly scheduled meeting. Can we do the pledge again?
No, you don't have to.
Okay. So we're in our regularly scheduled meeting. Before we get into the meeting, the agenda's been posted on the website for some time, and or from yesterday. And we as a board received a few questions about items on the agenda from various members of the community via email and one or two telephone calls. So I wanted to take a minute to address those questions. I'm sure many of you in here tonight have similar questions. So I wrote down a few different points on the contract. So to the extent that there are any follow-up questions after I explain, you know, we're going to get into our normal question topic where you can ask questions on the agenda tonight. We'll go through the agenda, and then if you have questions on items not on the agenda, you can go through and do that. So you will note that tonight we are voting on three specific contracts relating to our administration. I want to take a minute to explain the process and the steps forward. First, we had two vacancies in the administration left open by Linda Adams and John Allen's departures. As you saw in the budget presentation tonight and on, was it the February presentation, one of those positions was removed or abolished, did not show up in the budget that we had. So we had determined that we will fill one vacancy, and we realized the savings in our budget for the other, which will not be filled, and that's reflected in this budget. So the total number of administrators has been reduced. To that end, we've evaluated the roles and responsibilities of our current administration, the needs of the district, and our desire to drive educational excellence. We determined that we are best served by repositioning and redefining the duties of our administration, and we have created two new roles. Those roles are both assistant superintendent roles. For the first role, we conducted an interview process in accordance with our policies. We received over 60 resumes. The board and the superintendent narrowed the list to 10 candidates. Of those 10, we contacted the top 8, and 5 agreed to come in for an interview. A community committee interviewed 5 candidates, and following their great feedback, the list was narrowed to 2 individuals by the board and the superintendent. The superintendent and the board interviewed both individuals and unanimously chose Raina Ingolia as the best candidate. Her new title is the Assistant Superintendent of Curriculum, Instruction, Data Coordination, and Building and Grounds. She will also play a key role in the evaluation of principals, overseeing assessments, and managing grant writing. We are unanimous in our support of the process and Ms. Ingolia's selection to this position and are extremely pleased to have her in this role. We believe that she will further the principles that govern our leadership team, be instrumental in expanding our AP and evaluating IB offerings, and help to drive excellence in our facilities management. We plan to discuss possibilities regarding the high school assistant principal vacancy left by Raina's promotion. The second position we created encompassed many of the same duties for which Mr. Soto is currently responsible. We want to thank the CMAA for allowing this to occur for Mr. Soto, and we are pleased to continue to work with them to achieve greater savings going forward. The title for this role is Assistant Superintendent for Student Services, Personnel, and Instruction. Included in this role is evaluation of principals, staffing and the hiring process, management of instructional technology, oversight of the APPR process, the district news, student management systems, and residency compliance. Mr. Soto has graciously agreed to take on the expanded role with the expanded title for no incremental pay beyond what he would have earned in his current role next year. For that, we extend our highest appreciation. We are unanimous in our support for Mr. Soto and the path that he will lead us on. I want to take a moment to address the terms of their respective agreements, which we believe are a model for the district going forward. The district was successful in negotiating terms with both parties wherein their contractual increases are tied to the lesser of the CPI, so the consumer price index, to the lesser of the CPI and the tax cap, and in no case shall exceed 2.5%. We believe that this provision allows us to ensure that salary increases, contractually mandated salary increases, do not require programmatic cuts given the tax cap limitations. That was a very important thing to us as a board as we negotiated these contracts, and we believe, as I said, kind of a model going forward. We never want to have to take from a program to pay contractually mandated increases because you can't grow. And I think to all of us it was a very important thing, and we're very appreciative both Raina and Ricardo for that. We've also tied the reimbursement for educational expenses to a period of 2 years following receipt of credit, which ensures that we enjoy some benefit of the education we have agreed to fund. We thank both for their leadership and understanding the district financial limitations, and we are very excited by the course that we are taking. It's important to us that the community understand the net savings we have achieved by this configuration. Specifically, we have saved $321,569 as compared to last year in administration. That's Ms. Adams, Mr. Allen, and Ms. Kelly cost a total of $519,332. Replacing Raina Ingolia and part-time secretarial assistants is a cost to the district of $198,763. And Mr. Soto expanding his role with no incremental pay beyond what he would have made in his current year means that the net savings, as I said, was $321,000. We believe that's extremely significant, and we really appreciate you working with us. Finally, I want to take a moment to note that the CMAA has worked with us and has approved the abolishment of the director of the PPS position, which was Mr. Soto's position, from the bargaining unit, which has permitted us to create a new position covering the original and additional duties as I outlined above. We very much appreciate their willingness to work with us as well. So, okay. All right, so I'll take questions on that after. I'm going to go through. Mr. Stewart's contract. So you saw Appendix G on the on the agenda. Mr. Stewart's contract has been typically extended annually to add 1 year to the existing term, thereby maintaining 5 years on his contract. While the board fully supports Mr. Stewart, and I personally think he is working extremely hard, I have made clear over the years that, in general, I do not support early extensions. Mr. Stewart's contract requires a vote annually. In order to address the annual vote issue, as well as a need to provide clarification on the transfer of his annuity payments in the event that the contract is not extended, we discussed the revision to the current agreement. In our conversations regarding the resolution of the issues, he expressed that he understands our position regarding early contract extensions. Accordingly, he agreed to remove the obligation to vote annually and acknowledge that there will be no extension this year. Excuse me. He also agreed that the annuity will not transfer now, given no extension. The annuity is basically a pension plan that was put in place when he took the role initially, and it was set aside. The district owns it as kind of a retention type of arrangement. Okay, so that's what that was, and a little bit of his pay is put in by the district each year. We agreed that the annuity will transfer in the following three situations. One, his retirement from the district. Retirement's defined by the New York State. Two, he leaves but gives us 90 days notice. This is a new provision and will allow us to properly conduct a process to find a replacement. Very important to the board, and Mr. Stewart was very clear in saying he wouldn't ever do anything other than that and leave us in a tough position. And three, we give him notice of the revocation of an automatic renewal provision, which I'll explain now. Given the removal of the obligation to vote and to streamline the process on an annual basis, we have made clear that no vote will occur this year, and absent board action will not occur next year. We believe this will allow him to continue to focus on the growth of the district. Excuse me. We have agreed to add a provision that will extend Mr. Stewart's contract to maintain a 2-year term, but that extension will not have any effect until such time as he has only 2 years remaining. Okay? This provision may be removed by the board at any time, thereby removing the maintenance of term provision. The provision also terminates in 2021, so 6 years. Okay? The board is unanimous in its support of this resolution. We thank him for his understanding and his agreement to this amendment, which we think will serve the interests of the district in the longer term. So given that I've just gone through those three contracts, and that was where I've got the majority of the questions on tonight's agenda, I want to take questions on those three contracts first, then we'll get to the rest of the agenda, then we'll go through the agenda, and then if you've got questions on anything else, items not on the agenda, we'll do that. Everybody okay with that? Okay. So questions on those three contracts as I've explained them. Yes. Can you just come up just so that everybody can hear? I'm sorry. I mean, I'm happy to go back through it. I know there's a lot.
Yeah.
That's why I wrote it out. I wanted it to be clear.
Yeah, it wasn't clear. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It was Mr. Stewart, like that provision.
Yep.
Do it in layman's terms.
Sure. So here it is. Right now, we're 2015, right? Mm-hmm. He has 4 years left on his contract, okay? What has typically been done is when he's gotten to 4 years, the board has said, we want to extend you and add an additional year to get you back to five. Okay. What we're doing now is not doing that. Okay. So then he'll run through this year. He will then go to 3 years. Okay. Then he will run through next year and go to 2 years. He'll have 2 years left. When he gets to the point that he has 2 years left, he will. So we're not going to have a vote this year unless a new board says, "Hey, we want to go in a different direction and make some agreement with Mr. Stewart." There will not be a vote next year. Okay. We'll then get to the point, tell me if I'm saying anything wrong. Thank you. They'll then get to the point where we have 2 years left. At that point, for each day that he burns, each day that he lives and works, a day will be added to the end. Okay? So he'll always have 2 years. That provision that adds that day to the end, basically it's a provision that says for each day that he works, a day gets added, so he always has 2 years. That provision can be removed from the contract without Mr. Stewart's consent by a vote of the board. Got it? Okay.
Josh, just to make sure I understand, so, and I'm not even clear enough to quite
phrase the question, so just bear with me a second, sir. If the board chooses not to act at all once Mr. Stewart hits 2 years, if you choose whatever board chooses not to vote anyway or whatever, it automatically then just continues.
It will continue.
Day for day.
Day for
day. Every day he works, the contract is extended.
And at any time, Larry, at any time, the board can say, we don't like this automatic continuance. We want to put it on the agenda and have a vote and say we are removing that provision. And at that time, every day that he works, it'll burn down the 2 years. It won't get extended any longer.
It won't get extended past that additional.
Right.
Okay. I'm clear on what you said now.
Got it? Okay. Any other questions?
Hi. I'm Jenica Nill. Yeah, it is a lot to digest. So just to clarify, so Mr. Soto will be doing his current job in addition to all those other things?
Yes.
Okay, so I just, on my personal level, and I guess this is more of a comment than a question, I just feel that it's so overextended as it is related to special education. I have a lot of concerns that central administration, no one has any certification in special education, and it just concerns me about the leadership related to that. In researching contracts and trying to be as informed as I can, you know, I noticed, too, that our pairs contracts are up. There's just a lot of things going on. We've lost over $500,000 in cross-contracted students. I just have a lot of concerns, and I feel like with just being notified about all of this within the last 24 hours of seeing the agenda and try to digest it, you know, it's so hard to even be able to come up with good questions, and so I guess those are just my comments. But thank you.
Thank you.
Just one more request, and I this has to do with the agenda item. If there's a way that we could make contracts existing and possibly proposed available in a PDF format somehow on the website, I think it could alleviate some of the questions, some of the confusion that we have, because it's all foilable information, especially after it's negotiated or put on the agenda, it becomes foilable information. But people just see the agenda. They don't see the detail. You know, they see the title of the motion,
right,
but they don't see the detail. Whereas at least, you know, I know myself, if I could have seen Appendix G easily on Mr. Stewart's contract, you know.
Yep. No, it
could have been self-explanatory. If it's something we could look into maybe adding, at least for the transparency's sake.
Understood. We've talked about that in the past, and one of the ways that you do that is through the website that's called...
See-through New York.
No.
Yes, Board Docs.
Board Docs.
Yeah.
One of that, see-through New York is once it's been signed and uploaded. He's saying before we approve. One of the ways to do it is and have better organization is through a web internet software. Not internet software. Software called Board Docs, where you can get everything there and you get all your policies there. And we talked about that, and I think that's something that's kind of exciting to do, and we'll clarify. But, you know, we're in a situation right now financially where that's tough. And, you know, when we had Mr. Allen here doing that, those types of things, he was able to upload more. And Ms. Nill, kind of to your point, we've listened to the community. We've heard you need to save in administration. You need to try to cut and try to consolidate and make sure that we can spend with the teachers that are with our kids and the people that are directly hands-on. And that's what we've tried to do. And I understand your concern. I get it absolutely, completely, and totally. But we've tried to really consolidate in that way. So, yes, it's something that we can look at, Larry. Any other questions on the contracts? Okay. Great. Any questions on the rest of the agenda, just agenda items? Nobody? Okay. Pat.
Okay. Do you want to ask for a motion to accept the
motion to accept the minutes of the special meeting April 16, 2015, and the regular meeting of April 22, 2015?
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following employee to return to service.
Motion.
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 Motion. Second.
Sorry, I had a head start.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Okay.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education appoints the following individual as substitutes for the 2014 2015 school year as follows.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Before we go on, I'm going to ask Mr. Stewart to explain number seven.
Yeah. Missing Golia is up for tenure, I believe, in a month from now, where we're going to have our tenure celebration for those people in the district that receive it. I thought it was important. I recommend it to the board, although it's obvious when you see somebody of Missing Golia's ability and all that she is, that she gets a promotion, so you would see that and understand that that she's doing a good job. But from our standpoint in the area of education, tenure, it means a lot to us. It shows that the work that you've done up to that point was commendable. I don't recommend tenure unless it's enthusiastic. I've said that here for many years. So I did make a recommendation and felt it was the right thing to do, although it's going to change very quickly in the next couple of motions if the board so wishes. I thought it was important to make the recommendation to the Board of Education to grant Ms. Ingolia actually tenure a month early.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the tenure appointment of the following individual.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Item 8, resolved, the Board of Education hereby abolishes the position of Director of Pupil Services effective May 6, 2015.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Yes. Again, thank you to the CMAA
thank
for working
you.
With us for that. We really appreciate it.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education accepts the following resignations.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
The district recently advertised for candidates to fill various teacher and support staff vacancies for 2014-2015. Candidates were interviewed by committees, building principals, and or the superintendent. Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following appointments.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the appointment of the following individuals for the May 19th, 2015 budget vote, each at $9 per hour, except where noted.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following contracts in accordance with the terms and conditions of the contracts as well as at the established costs contained in said contracts.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the budget transfers.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the treasurer's report for the month of March 2015.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Excuse me.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the student activity treasurer's report for the middle school and the high school for the month of March 2015.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education nominates and approves Joe Townsend as chairperson for the May 19th, 2015 budget vote. And be it further resolved that the following details of the vote are also hereby adopted.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following individuals for the 2014-2015 committees.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes. Yes.
Motion carries unanimously. I want to stop for a second here. Danielle, I responded to an email that you sent today about the Smart Schools Bond, and part of what I said there was going to be a presentation tonight on it. I saw a presentation. The presentation will not be tonight, but I'm going to answer the, if you don't mind, I'm going to answer the question that you asked, and it may put you right on the spot, Mr. Soto. The question was, is the funding for the Smart Schools Bond in this budget, right? And it's about
1.34,000.
The answer to that question is no. So there's a process to, A, identify items that are appropriate and that fall under that funding, and that process effectively will be with the technology committee?
Yes. Yeah. It is a process that you have to follow. It is a step that you have to go through. One of the things that the United States Department of Education is proposing now is to make what is going to be called Smart School Improvement Plan available to be put up to the business portal effective June 15th. But we're still waiting for guidance on the actual template that all districts will be asked to use to put up the proposition, put up the plan, the capital improvement.
So then the way that it works is once you have that plan, once that plan is approved,
it will be submitted to New York State for approval.
The board approves
it. The board approves it.
The state approves it.
Yes.
Then we come back and we...
Then we come back and the monies are expensed by the district. The state is proposing that we will be reimbursed within 90 days.
So it comes from our fund balance.
Yes, it does come from our fund balance.
Okay.
So we would have to expend the money.
Okay.
Once again, it has to go through an approval process. Prior to going to say that, we have to post it on our website for 30 days, and then the Board of Education will have to approve it. Once it is approved, then it will go up to say that for final approval.
Is there a timing as to when they will begin to release funds?
They're projecting, once again, 90 days from the point that the plan was approved.
So if you had a plan today, would we have it in 90 days? Oh, that's what I'm saying. Are we thinking 3 months or 2 years? What are we thinking?
We're thinking hopefully the portal, they're projecting that it will be open for applications on June 15th.
Okay.
So hopefully if that projection is correct, we're hoping to have a Smart Schools Improvement Plan done so that we can submit it. I plan to hopefully get together with Mr. Unger and the Technology Committee and anyone else that will be involved or interested in engaging in the process so that we can sort of gauge the status of the district and see what type of capital improvement in form of technology we need to put up.
I'd ask that you, at least at one meeting, have a joint meeting with the curriculum committee, because
sure.
I think that tying the two together is a key point. Okay. Thank you. Are you good? Did that answer? Okay. So, again, a couple other notes that I wanted before we get to general questions. Received an email that a child suffered a sprained ankle while using monkey bars on the playground. And I just want to address it. You know, we certainly take every instance of a child getting hurt absolutely seriously. It's a big deal to us. To that end, we want to let the community know that we have ensured throughout the application and building process for the playground which is manufactured by BCI Burke Playground and Safety Surfacing, that it complies with all required safety standards. So what does that mean? The applicable standards are, there's two different standards. One, the federal government sets forth what they call a voluntary standard. It's kind of best practices, and that's ASTM F1487, if you want to go home and look it up. But it's actually kind of interesting. I spent some time today reading it. And then there's also safety guidelines, which are promulgated by the CPSC. CPSC is the Consumer Product Safety Commission. And what they do is they kind of set forth guidelines for pretty much everything you may have, whether it be a crib, a stroller, any child's toy, but it goes on. Anything that's in your home, if it's an alarm system or anything that's in a residence that somebody can be injured, they have these guidelines. And what happens is if a product is deemed unsafe, they go through and they force a recall process, and there's a lot of law around that, but that's neither here nor there. So it's an independent agency within the United States federal government with the authority to inform the public of current product safety, performance information, and recommended practices. I wrote too much here. Hold on. So basically, I'm summarizing what I wrote today. The standards includes features that promote awareness, basically signs saying be careful, signs saying don't wear a scarf, don't, you know, be careful of your hood, all things where over the years kids have been injured. So that's how they learn from this, and that's how they then change the standards. They also include, and I spent some time today going through it, what's, you know, the height of playgrounds, how each thing should be structured, the distance apart, the types of material on the ground. So they basically lay out what is a safe playground. These are experts that, I mean, this is, goes back to the 80s when these guidelines were initially published, that over the last 25 years have figured out that if it's more than this wide, it's dangerous, but if it's this wide, it's okay because your head can't get stuck. So what does that mean? We looked, and again, throughout this entire process, we looked and we ensured that the playground that was installed complies with all of these safety standards. And we also looked at the people that installed it, and they are all qualified to install in accordance with manufacturer specs and the standards. Finally, we had the playground inspected by an independent agency, and they confirmed that the playground and the surfacing meet all current guidelines and is safe for public use. While we certainly feel for any child who is hurt, we believe the playground is a huge step forward for the community and safety of our children, and certainly complies with all requirements. I then took it a step further, and I've been on the playground a bunch of times. I have three kids. I played on the playground myself, and as soon as I got the note, I went to the playground. And I've noticed, I mean, every night significantly more use than I'd ever seen on the playground in the past, and I think that's partially because it's new. I'm comforted by the standards set forth by the experts. I've also watched my kids on it. I've watched other kids on it, and I think it's great. I think the kids are loving it. But I do think, as I said, more kids are using it now. It's brand new. They've been cooped up all winter. As time goes by, I believe the newness factor will wear off a bit, and the usage during the day, the extreme usage, will come down. In the interim, you know, I'd like to ask our aides to really be diligent and ensure that the kids are playing in the proper manner and not going crazy. And we'll certainly monitor to the extent that there are increased injuries and there are things we can do. We're going to do that. I mean, the last thing we want is to have something unsafe, but we're comfortable given the guidelines that it is safe. Yeah. So then we have questions and comments from the community on items not on the agenda tonight.
I'd like to just say something about the playground. First of all, that's my son. That's the one with the, we hope it's just a sprained ankle. But you know what? Kids get hurt, and I understand that. And this is not to take away from the fact that Brookhaven Town was good enough to do this for us. We needed a playground. They gave us a beautiful playground. But that doesn't take away from the fact that as adults and parents, if we see something that, you know, might be, you know, questionably, you know, I don't want to use the word dangerous, but, you know, could be, you know, somewhat dangerous. That's the word. It's up to us to raise that. And personally, you know, I've been up there many times as well, not as many times, but at least a half dozen now with my kids, and they love it. And it's new, you know, so as Josh said, that's part of it. It's the newness. It's the weather's finally nice, so the kids are getting out there, and there's a lot of kids on it. But in my opinion, as a parent of an 8-year-old all the way up through a 14-year-old, there are areas of the playground that, you know, maybe aren't appropriate for a first or a second grader, my son being a second grader, due to height. You know, he fell off the top, the highest part of it, that little walking bar. And you know what? I'm not one to comment because I'm far from ultra-coordinated. I trip over a seam in a seamless rug. So, you know, but there, I think as long as we can monitor and if we get reports of certain areas that are, you know, causing more injuries than normal, than we would expect, then maybe we need to address it. Maybe, as Josh said, maybe have the monitors, you know, maybe that bar, because of its height, my son's only 4 foot tall. It's taller than he is, so he fell more than his height. Maybe that should be for, like, you know, please, if you're in third, fourth, or fifth grade, you know, or height restriction on it or something like that, do something like that so that the smaller kids, I mean, God forbid it was a kindergartner that's even smaller than my son that fell off it. I do appreciate everything that was done, and it is a beautiful playground, but we have to, as parents, as adults, make sure that if we see something, whether it be our aides, anybody in our staff, those reports that we do get, we need to make sure that if we see something repetitive, that we address it very timely. And if it's repetitive and we can't address it immediately, then we should do something to lock down that area maybe. You know, because There's two areas that I will tell you right now that concern me with the playground. The bar. Because it's only one, it's one handhold. You know, so you got to work your way across. The other one is you got that big spinny thing that the bigger kids, thank God the little kids can't jump. They can't reach it. They can't jump up and get it. But I was there the other night with my son, and actually it wasn't the other night. It was the other afternoon with my son. And there were a bunch of bigger kids there, and they were spinning around on it, having a good time. And the one girl's hand slipped off it, and thankfully she was a bigger kid, so she actually caught herself. But if you look where that's located, she actually landed on the concrete. Now, she didn't hurt herself because she caught herself. But because you've got the gyroscopic motion, you get launched. If you slip at the wrong time, you get launched. She landed with her legs on the concrete. She landed on her toes because she's big. You know, so I think that's something we need to watch for, too. We might have to, in that area where that is, maybe, you know, I know it would cost a little bit of money, but yank the concrete and put a couple more pieces of the matting down, because that's good matting that they have there.
Yeah. No, we should, absolutely monitor. I agree with everything you're saying, and look at it.
And my opinion might be slanted because, like I said, it's my kid.
Nah, listen, I hear you. I also printed out, and anybody can look at it, the Public Playground Safety Handbook. You can go on the website, on the CPSC website, and get it and read it if you'd like. Any questions?
Yes.
Can you just come up and state your name just so that we know? Thank you. And it's recording, as always.
I'm Christina McCluskey. I'm the one that wrote that letter. So I know that rock, that's my big concern. The rock is too close to the tall pillars. And in that handbook, it states that it should be 6 feet away.
We'll talk.
And my next question is, are we waiting for injuries before we fix this, or do we want to fix it before the injury?
So we've been, just to be crystal clear, we've been told that if this complies with all safety standards. So we've been told there are safety standards that are promulgated by experts, and we've been told very, very clearly, and we've asked time and again, including an independent agency that came in to look, that it absolutely complies.
And are you using that handbook as a guide? Is that what they're going by? That's what I want to know. What is the standard?
The standards are, as I said at the beginning, ASTM F1487 is the federal voluntary standard that applies to public playgrounds, and that's what the compliance is. The compliance certification is too. So we have the compliance certification both by the manufacturer of the playground, the installer, as well as an independent agency that came in to look. So absolutely, if they said this doesn't comply, this is not safe.
But if we feel that it's not safe for the age range from these children, mm-hmm. that are climbing up on a 5-foot pillar, mm-hmm. and there's a very large rock less than 2 feet away, if we feel that as a community is dangerous, mm-hmm. maybe we should take it upon ourselves to remove that rock. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a parent. I'm also one of the monitors out on the playground. So I see how these children play. And if you're saying, like, let's cut off this area for certain ages, that I don't know how that would really be done at recess or on the weekends.
Sure.
So
on the weekends, it would be really up to the parent.
Yeah. Thank you. Move the rock.
Thank you.
It's not a broken arm issue. It's not like someone's going to fall and break their arm. They're going to get a concussion. They're going to break their neck.
Thank you.
Josh, you got my email about Danny. And while I appreciate what Gary said about it, Danny fell. Gary had to take 2 afternoons off of work to take him to the ER. I've had 4 kids through Clayton Huey. My issue is not that they get bumps, bruises, and cuts. That's part of everyday life on a playground. My issue is he fell 6 foot. When he landed, they're worried about his growth plate. Now, you may say, okay, any child has that. He has a boot on for 3 weeks. They're going to look at his growth plate. It's also his left leg that he's had PT on for over a year due to his CP. It bothers me greatly that he's going to be losing all this progress he's made for a year of his grandmother taking him out to Riverhead once a week for the PT. So we have that issue. I don't want to see any child hurt on any playground, but I do understand they get hurt. My 2 that are still in school were hurt 4 times since the playground is open. And this is the first time I've had to take any of them to the ER because of an incident on a playground. What bothers me the most is that when I've gone in, and I heard before there were a lot of kids being hurt, and I thought, okay, it's new. There's a lot more children using it. They've been cooped up all winter. I've put down all of those things. Okay, that's kind of what happens this time of year. But when I have your actual teachers and staff saying to me that they voiced their concern about certain errors and were told to shh, I am offended because I want every one of our children to, whether it's a little hurt or a big one, to look at something for prevention. And when you look at it, you go, oh, we can fix this. You problem solve. It's not saying it's not a wonderful gift. It is. People work very hard to bring it to the children. But I think when the monitors have been saying things and asking, maybe they need a little bit extra monitors for maybe the next 2 months. Maybe an in-service on safety because there's so many more children using it. So it's the area of the rock. It's the area maybe of hand grips. Many of Danny's friends are getting, like, flung off because their hands are getting very sweaty this time of year. But the problem that I see that reflects upon the board here is that this is what you should be hearing from your staff because they're saying it, but nobody's listening to them. And why don't you just look at the records and say, how many did we have in September hurt? Ooh, how many are hurt now on the playground? Those records are available. An accident report is always made for this. And then go through and go, oh, that amount goes up. But this is the problem solving that should go on through Clayton Huey from your staff there, your monitors, your nurses, your teachers, the same people that when I was down there said, oh, yeah, everybody's been getting hurt on the playground. And it's just saying you can't address every issue. If it meets the main guidelines, fine. But we shouldn't just leave it at that. You know, it's not okay just to leave it at that and say, oh, okay, the kids just get hurt. The rock there is a big thing. The cement there is a big thing. Maybe they just need little extra grips, things that might not cost a huge amount of money. But it bothers me the most that your staff, there is no hierarchy of something being problem solved. And that's the problem when it goes back to all of this, the administration. Why I'm talking about that, I will also say about the busing. I talked to you since last May, busing, 2 weeks ago. The monitors, not the this monitor, I don't know what monitor, whoever does behind Clayton Huey, they never came out in the rain for the little minibuses with the kids on the wheelchair. As administrators, your administrators, if I've complained about that for a year and a half, should be walking back there every chance they get, every teacher, everybody that knows that there has been an issue, and saying, did something happen? They never opened the door. So you took the kid down with the wheelchair, pouring rain. Nobody came out for him. You left him in the pouring rain. That's up to your administration. That is not the bus company. That's nobody else. And who speaks for the child? And that's what I'm trying to say. I try to speak for the child or the kid that cannot speak, who may not be able to go home and say, hey, Mom, I got stuck out in the rain. I got soaked. I'm freezing. That is the kind of accountability that you need from your staff. And I'm telling you, you're not getting that. Because you're not getting the truth. The issue with the playground has been voiced by your monitors, your teachers, and your other staff, but nobody's bringing it to the board's attention.
Thank you very much. Any other questions on items not on the agenda tonight?
Just if we could go back to the budget for a brief second and the reserve fund that's applied to offset. I understand we've come down from $2 million it was a few years ago, Mr. Stewart. Last 2 years, it's been roughly the same, 1.2 and 1.4, whatever order. Did this board, and this is kind of a question to everybody, or Carol, whoever can answer better, have we ever looked specifically where the surplus is, specific items? Is it a consistent area that we're over-budgeting for each year? Is it, you know, or is it pension 1 year and supplies and materials another? Because the numbers seem to be at least grouped from memory. They're clusters. You know, it was $2 million for a few years. We looked at it a little harder now for at least 2 years in a row. It's 1.4 million. But is it in the same areas that we're over budgeting? Is it something that, I'm not saying a surplus is bad, but every year we're using at least $1 million of the reserve fund to offset the tax levy. So it's not a real apples-to-apples, orange-to-orange comparison, because, in essence, the community is giving the district, you know, $1 million interest-free loan each year to keep next year's taxes down. You know, we're giving money that could be better kept in the residents' pockets, in my opinion. You know, ideally, you want to spend your last dollar on the last day of the fiscal year. You know, I mean, if your budget was perfect, that's what you would be doing.
And if you have the absolute certainty that you will always have that same amount of last dollar, right? So we've got kind of a unique situation in this district where we have tuition, right, which does vary. We have a best guess estimate based on special ed students that are coming in, based on and tuition in students. That changes. The salaries, you mentioned the salary line items and the benefit line items, pretty tight. We kind of know what they are based on contracts, so those are pretty tight. If you went to say, you know, Carol or Russ, the surplus over the last 5 years, what categories is that typically from? Typically supplies?
Carol can give you probably pretty actual, but I will say we've got to be very careful, because probably the worst thing you can do in budgeting a school district is ever to go over your expenses. As we all witnessed before my time, or many of you witnessed at East Bridges, and what actually occurred there, and then what New York State had to do for at least 5 or 10 years there. So that's the number one worry. I believe Carol would feel comfortable getting us down to $1 million. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she would be comfortable, she's very conservative, of going too far off of that. Mm-hmm. I think for the most part, it's been in some of the similar areas, although we have brought it down, and that was a goal of ours because we did agree with what you're saying, but up to a point. We've got to be extremely careful, especially in a small school district. If all of a sudden you have two students that have high needs that cost $300,000 or $350,000 or whatever it might be, all of a sudden you have that cost when people move in. You have to be prepared for that. But, Carol, if you want to talk about the specific areas or where you see it, we do know exactly dollar for dollar every year exactly where it comes from.
Every year, I mean, it differs. But when we build the budget, we build it, we start at zero, and we build it up. All the salaries, we account for all the salaries right down to each individual. We don't, there's a lot of districts who build in contingency positions, but we don't. We're that tight. I would like to, you know, just in case you had to add an additional teacher or a section for whatever reason, but we don't have that luxury. We are budgeting down to the line item. And sometimes too on the revenue side, maybe 1 year we received additional state aid. There was a transportation several years back. We were due transportation, and if you don't apply for it in that particular year, then you get put on this list. And so 1 year, I think it was $400,000 that we received. That was excess. We didn't plan on it that year. But the tuition, when we build the budget with the tuition, we're estimating how many students do we think are going to, you know, based upon the graduation, graduating class, how many kids do we think are going to attend? And the same with the special ed students, you know, how many students from other districts will be attending our school? And sometimes, you know, the estimate is right on, sometimes it's off. But we do our best. So there's always going to be either surplus on the revenue side or on the expense side. Last year, I believe we had more on the revenue side and less on the expense side. This year, it's going to be reversed. So
I think a big takeaway is the key takeaway is last year the Board of Education was at a 1.18,
yep.
and it ended up being a zero tax levy increase. And this year, and the board set the goal at a 1.5, and for all intents and purposes, you will see a 1.5, assuming the assessments don't change. That
right.
I can't control. But you will see a 1.5 on your tax.
If you're a non-veteran.
If you're a non-veteran. Right. If you're a veteran, you will see something extremely better than that. But I think that's really the takeaway. The budgeting process has gotten much tighter over the last number of years. Mm-hmm. And this year, I think that, you know,
while we've had, you know, very, very few programmatic cuts, we've tried to be as careful as possible in our expenses, and it's our hope that there is more savings to come, things that we're working through. So,
and also they get the tax rebate from the freeze that we were able to get last year, and we plan to also get that this year.
So the 1.3, that what do you mean?
$90. The other way probably gets, I would say, 120.
Because we have a savings plan in place, New York State has said, if you have the appropriate savings plan in place, you will get
a rebate of
a rebate back of the increase.
Right.
Now, that's not every year for the rest of your life.
No.
But that's. So I think the key takeaway is the fact that the levy has been really low the last 2 years.
The levy has seemed low. And Carol, maybe you're the person to ask. Is it legal? Can you specifically create a line item in the budget that says it's going to go directly to the reserve fund? So, say 2%, whatever the number is of your overall budget, or proposed budget, or planned budget, is applied to a reserve fund. For clarity's sake, for the community, because again, the question comes up, and I'm the one raising it this year, but I know it's come up in past years. Well, you know, where did that come from? And we're just.
Are you asking about like a capital reserve fund so that you can say we're saving money to do a particular project?
No, what would be your. The money that we save at the end of the year gets added to the reserve fund that you can then apply to
it
next year's budget.
It pays back the money that was applied, basically.
Right.
It should be. You try to get it as tight as you can so that it's a wash, so that you're not using your savings account to fund your operation. You're borrowing and paying back.
Just a question, is that...
You can't put a particular line item in the budget for designating as surplus.
Okay.
And then a danger, too, is if you do put that line item in the budget and then you have surplus, and you know, naturally have surplus in other areas, an area sometimes is, say, salaries, okay? I budget for every individual. Someone maybe goes out on maternity leave, or somebody retires mid-year. That's surplus. In most cases, it's surplus. I can't plan for that. So if I was to put a line item in for the surplus, and then I have that additional surplus, then you'll be yelling at me because I have too much surplus.
No, we could offer a tax rebate.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions on items not on the agenda tonight? Yes. Come on up. Yeah. Thank you.
So just to address the prior statement about getting kids off the bus or leaving them in the rain. You can't hear me? Sorry. Okay. I'm here as a para president, and there are several of us here this evening. And just to address the issue of leaving a child out in the rain in a wheelchair, I can just tell you that we have never done that, nor would we ever leave a child, regardless of wheelchair, rain, shine, whatever. We just would not do that. I don't know when this happened, where it happened, but we only have one child in a wheelchair in the elementary, so I'm not sure where this happened or when it happened. But I can tell you that we are out there every morning with special ed teachers, with the paraprofessionals. We get our kids off the bus in the morning. We put our kids back on the bus in the afternoon. So I'm not quite sure.
And as an administration, just I know you're the president of the union, but mm-hmm. administration watches all the time. Our relationship is incredible. The respect we have for the work that you do. We absolutely, from administration, I saw a lot of emails even today.
Mm-hmm.
The compliments you get from the community, from the administration, I can't tell you wholeheartedly how much we respect what you do, and even at the pay that you get. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Really a question, but a statement to Gilly and Castiglione. Wella Balsam Shampoo used to say, and I'm dating myself, I told two friends, they told two friends. So that works. I mean, telling people about the budget, it's going to get that vote out. So please tell two friends, everybody here, they'll tell two friends, and we'll get that out. Also, this week, Teacher Appreciation Week. Thank you, teachers. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you. Okay, dates to remember. The next Board of Education meeting will be on May 20th, 2015 at 7:30 p.m. in the Administration Building.
The more important date is the day before on the vote.
Yes, absolutely correct. Motion to adjourn to executive session for purposes of discussions regarding proposed pending or current litigation, collective negotiations under the Taylor Law with the CMPA, medical, financial, or credit history of any person or corporation or matters leading to the appointment, promotion, demotion, discipline, or termination of a particular person or corporation, other matters, the disclosure of which would result in an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you.